Hi, this is Alan Chartok. This is the Congressional Corner, and we are here with Congressman Mondaer Jones, who has a most interesting background, and he's from the 17th District. Congressman Jones, I guess we started with something that surprised me. You said, and you offered, that you were for expanding the court because of the way in which it has been abused by the Trump administration, I take it. So what would you see as the way to do that?
Well, I think there ought to be a hearing on this subject, one that will establish that the size of the Supreme Court has changed several times over the course of American history. And indeed, the Constitution vests within Congress the prerogative of creating the size of the court and making adjustments to that size. The population of America has increased dramatically, but we still only have 9 justices on the Supreme Court. And of course, as I alluded to in our prior segment, we have now hyper-partisan justices in the 6-3 conservative majority who are hostile to democracy itself, and who are working, just look at Justice Alito's comments recently, to entrench Republican power. We need more independent thinkers, and Americans want more balance on that Supreme Court. Americans don't want a 6-3 majority on the Supreme Court. That's not reflective of where we are politically as a country. We need more ideological diversity. Diversity that reflects the lived experiences of the very diverse, increasingly diverse American people. And then, of course, we've got to pass legislation that would actually expand the size of the Supreme Court and also add judges to the circuit courts of appeal and the lower courts. Because, again, those dockets have been flooded with cases, and it's really hard. I know as a former law clerk in the Southern District of New York to keep pace with all the work that these judges have to do without reinforcements.
So assuming that you could do it in the House of Representatives, where you have a majority, the Democrats, could you do it in the Senate?
A lot depends, right? a lot will depend on what happens in Georgia. And candidly, it's not clear to me that we don't have to elect more folks to the Senate in order to get sufficient support for this, at least at the Supreme Court level. But it remains to be seen. There's so much left to be decided, including on January 5th in these two runoffs, before we can really assess accurately what the state of play will be.
You know, when Lyndon Johnson stood up and said, "We shall overcome," he also said candidly to people, "Well, I've just lost the South." Georgia surprised us in the Trump election. What do you make of that?
People like Stacey Abrams and activists and community leaders on the ground were doing the long-suffering, ultimately successful work of expanding the electorate by registering people to vote, by impressing upon folks the importance of voting, and the realistic possibility of flipping Georgia from a red state to a blue or a purple state. It's why it's so important that folks running for office don't just go back to their constituents every 2 years, every 4 years, every 6 years asking for their support. They've got to be investing in infrastructure over the years. And that's what people have been doing, including in the black leaders in the black community in Georgia. And I'm just so proud of the work that has already been accomplished. And I'm looking forward to what happens on January 5th. With Raphael Warnock and John Ossoff.
You are, of course, black, and the question then becomes, why did it take so much effort? And this is only something that you will surmise. Why did it take so much effort to get the black vote out in the way that Stacey Abrams, as you just mentioned, did and everybody else did? Because so much is to be gained by people at the lower end of the economic spectrum voting Democratic. But what seems to be the issue?
It's a great question, and part of the answer is for a lot of folks in our society, including many members of the black community, even the Democratic Party has failed them. by not offering the kinds of policies that would materially improve the lives of working people and of people of color, who oftentimes tend to be the same person, the same people. And so, you know, when we talk about criminal justice reform, for example, many of the leading proponents in our country historically of policies that have harmed black people, that have been unfair to members of the black community, policies that at times have been downright racist, including the so-called war on drugs. There's been a lot of Democrats leading the charge on that as well. And so it's just important not to take black people for granted, or any demographic for granted, but rather to speak to their lived experiences, to take a genuine interest in understanding people's hopes and their fears, and in offering policies that will actually be helpful to them.
Following up on that, the death of George Floyd, which was a national disaster, and police reform, what kind of reforms among police officers would you like to see?
Well, I would like to see a lot of reforms. First things first, we have to end qualified immunity. And I'm really excited to help lead the charge on that in Congress. This was a judge-made doctrine that allows law enforcement officers to evade liability even when it's clear that they have violated the constitutional rights of civilians. The Supreme Court just made that doctrine up out of thin air. And so now we need a statute to fix that. We also need to make sure that if municipalities are receiving federal funds, they set up independent systems for investigating allegations of inappropriate conduct by police officers. It should not be left to district attorney's offices, which regularly work with law enforcement officers, in order to investigate the people who they work with. There's a clear conflict of interest there. Mm-hmm. And then we need to look at mandatory minimums and sentencing, and instead allowing judges the discretion to make sentences on their own based on the totality of a defendant's circumstances. We've got to legalize marijuana, which is already legal for white people in our society, effectively. These are just some of the really important policies that we need to be pushing for, and I think we'll ultimately win. You know, I think New York State, at least, will legalize marijuana in the year 2021. The governor has already suggested that he's come around to that idea.
Indeed he has. He told that to me directly, but it wasn't the first time he told me that. Listen, Mondaire Jones, this has been a wonderful discussion, and I'm so excited to have you with us on the Congressional Corner, and I can't wait for the next round, because we'll be there. I hope you are. Thanks so much.
Thank you. I look forward to it.